So today is sort of a part three. It's sort of a part three of a three-part series I kind of had planned about Leviticus and Messiah. So this would be the third week of that. I talked about, well, the beginning chapters of Leviticus certainly lays out the sacrificial system. And that's, we started the book of Leviticus a few weeks ago. Passover is coming up in a few weeks. So there's all these themes floating around in the water. And so I thought, well, it'd be a good time to talk about the sacrifices, because that's generally something not studied outside of Messianic Jewish circles. And this is because the book of Leviticus just, it needs its reputation rehabilitated some. It is broadly taught that in the Old Testament, the people dealt with sin via the sacrifices. And after the Old Testament, there's Yeshua, and his sacrifice covers that. So these sacrifices and offerings we read about in Leviticus, we don't need them anymore. And some commentaries go as far to say that participating in them is sort of like trampling on the work of Messiah. But if this is the case, then why did the disciples of Messiah continue to participate in temple ritual? We see Paul offering sacrifices in Acts 21. They were continually worshiping in there, we read in several different places. So it kind of gets the thought process going. Is there a way to reconcile this? Is there a different perspective, a way to stretch our thinking a little bit, and perhaps reconcile the book of Leviticus with Messiah? So we began that a few weeks ago, because it's not quite as simple as one would think. A closer look at Leviticus reveals that many of the sacrifices have nothing to do with sin. And so to say that all these sacrifices are done away with is a little bit more of an oversimplification. The purpose of the Levitical system wasn't to expiate sin, it was to draw near to God. It's really that simple. The sacrificing of the animal and the bringing of the blood up to the altar, and those are all means to an end. The end point is dwelling with the Lord, even if it's just enough for a temporary short time, as it would have been during the days of the tabernacle and the temple. Interesting fun fact, there was no sacrifice for intentional sin, which is mainly how we view the sacrifice our Messiah did, was for what we intentionally do wrong. And there's a common sense reason why there's not a sacrifice for intentional sin. It would only encourage us human beings to sin even more if there was, because that's how we are. We could just sin as much as we want and pay it off with some sacrifices. And that wasn't the purpose of the tabernacle. Once again, the purpose was to dwell in the presence of the Lord here on earth. We talked about this a little bit in the second week, last week, when we talked a little more about the book of Hebrews some. Bonnie did a great job talking about the different priesthood, right? The priesthood of Melchizedek and the priesthood of Levi are two really different priesthoods. And the book of Hebrews uses imagery to show how we can draw near eternally by looking at the imagery we read in the Levitical system. But it's not at the expense of the Levitical system. That's what's commonly taught. We are informed of the heavenly priesthood of Melchizedek via the earthly one of Levi. The two complement each other. And this is why the disciples found no contradiction in participating in temple ritual, because the two, they're like dovetail. One informs us of clues of the other. Listen, when it comes to the priesthood of Melchizedek, we don't have a whole lot of details on exactly what that looks like. We don't have a Torah of that priesthood. What we do have is a reflection of the heavenlies in the tabernacle and in the Levitical priesthood, and we have the Bible that gives us lots of details about that. So we can study that to learn clues about what is happening in the heavenly realm, and that's what the book of Hebrews largely does. That's sort of like a quick summary of the last two Shabbats. There's much more that could be said. You can look at it from many different angles, of course, but I just wanted to sort of stretch thinking and look at things beyond what we've commonly been taught. Commonly, we're taught things like vicarious atonement, penal substitution, all these different theological terms that I think they're helpful. Theology is helpful to help us develop a framework to understand the Lord. But where some of them, I think, fall a little bit short is they focus on the aspect of the animal dying or the aspect of the transference of the owner to the animal. Those are all important concepts, don't get me wrong, but they're all means to the end. The end is atonement or cleansing or the life, not just the blood, because the life's in the blood, the life being brought before the Lord. So a lot of that end game type stuff is what I try to focus on, not so much the means to get there, although it's all important. But today I wanted to focus a little bit more on Yeshua. We read about all these various sacrifices and offerings in the opening chapters of Leviticus. Which one would correlate to the work of Messiah? I mean, how does that work? Especially given there was no sacrifice for intentional sin. Well, the writers of the New Testament speak of Yeshua's death and resurrection in terms of various offerings. They don't just use one. And so we're going to take a look at some of those today as we're going to do a little bit back and forth in here. So I'm going to keep you a little bit busy because we're going to be in Leviticus chapter 6, but you're going to want to put a bookmark in Leviticus chapter 6. It's on page 103 because we're going to be kind of in the beginning chapters of Leviticus, and then we're going to be bouncing around a little bit to see what the New Testament writers, how they equate the what they're taught in Leviticus with how they perceive the work of Messiah. So first place we're going to turn, stick a bookmark here in Leviticus chapter 6, we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 27. It's on page 956 in your TLV, but Matthew chapter 27 and verse 45. This is when Yeshua lays down his life, of course. Matthew 27, verse 45 says, "Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Yeshua cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And so this happened when our master passed away, when he took that eternal, that permanent sacrifice that covers us all. The writer of Matthew points out that this happened during the ninth hour. Turning back to Leviticus chapter 6. Leviticus chapter 6 says this, Moses, or Adonai, spoke to Moses, saying, "Command Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the Torah of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall remain on the hearth atop the altar all night until morning, while the fire of the altar is kept burning on it. The Kohen is to put on his linen garment with his linen undergarments on his body, remove the fat ashes from where the fire was, consume the burnt offering on the altar, and put them beside the altar. Then he is to take off his garments, put on other ones, carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. The fire on the altar is to be kept burning on it. It must not go out. Each morning the Kohen is to put wood on it, laying the burnt offering in order upon it, and burning up as smoke the fat of the fellowship offerings. Fire is to be kept burning on the altar continually. It must not go out." And so what's happening here is there's two offerings, continual offerings that happen daily. Once in the morning, it's a lamb that starts everything off, starts out that day's services in the temple or tabernacle. The very last offering happens in the ninth hour, about 3 p.m. A lamb is put on the altar and it stays there all night. It is an olah offering. The word burnt means olah in the Hebrew. It means rising up. And so the writer in Matthew is connecting Yeshua's death. He passed away at the time of the ninth hour offering, which is an offering that you read about here in Leviticus chapter 6, also a type of burnt offering we read about in Leviticus chapter 1. So he's trying to draw some imagery here. He's not saying Yeshua was literally a lamb. He wasn't on an altar burning all night. But the point is that there's a sense of continuity because it's a continual offering. Then the offerings are all paused. And we know that he is continually interceding for us so that we may go before the Lord in prayer and supplication. That's the ninth hour of the day. And so being an olah offering, there's a rising up. The thoughts, the soothing aroma rises up to the heavenly places and pleases the Lord. And Yeshua being that olah offering, he rose up and pleases the Lord. So there's a lot of that imagery that a lot of the New Testament writers are trying to put in there, and you see a connection there between Leviticus chapter 6 and Matthew chapter 27. Let's try another one. Turn to 1 Corinthians 5, 7. Page 1107. This, of course, is sort of timely. You know, it's a Passover-themed section here, and we're headed right at Passover here in a few weeks, 2.5 weeks-ish. But 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7 says, "Get rid of the old hametz so that you may be a new batch, just as you are unleavened, for Messiah, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast, not with old hametz, the hametz of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread, the matzah of sincerity or truth." Here, Paul is equating our Messiah to the Passover lamb. Of course, he's not a literal Passover lamb, but he's drawing this imagery. And so what can we learn from that? Turning back to the book of Leviticus, we have to turn back about a page or so to chapter 3. We read in Leviticus chapter 3, there's something called a shalom offering or a shelamim offering, okay? The shelamim offering is what would be classified, the Passover sacrifice that Paul's kind of alluding to there falls under this category of shalom offerings or shelamim offerings. It's a peace offering. And the peace offering is unique. All the other offerings you read about are either eaten only by the priests or they're burnt up entirely on the altar. This here in chapter 3, the peace offering, the shelamim, is the only offering that the worshiper participates in. Everybody sits at the table and gets to eat when it comes to the peace offerings. The person, the worshiper, can bring part of it away from the tabernacle, bring it to his house, and have a grand feast at his house if he would like. The priest can take it back to his house. Some of it is taken up to the altar. And so the shalom, this peace offering, is something that everybody participates in. It's not a sin offering, interestingly enough. The Passover imagery is meant to show that Yeshua has brought redemption from Egypt, right? The bondage and the slavery, and there's freedom from death through his work. And the shelamim, the peace offering, gives us a sense that through Yeshua, we all have a place at the Lord's table. So that's the imagery that Paul's trying to get across. It's very, very, you know, of course, for this season, it's very pertinent. But by far, most of the New Testament writers refer to what Yeshua's work did, what he accomplished, as a sin offering. For example, Romans chapter 8, it's on page 1094. We have an example of him being described as a sin offering. So we'll have to read it. Romans chapter 8, it's on page 1094. Then we'll go back to Leviticus and see what the correlation is there. Romans 12, it's going to be verse 1, actually, we'll be starting in. Romans 8, verse 1 says, "Therefore there is now no condemnation for those who are in Messiah Yeshua, for the law of the Spirit of life in Messiah Yeshua has set you free from the law of sin and death. For what was impossible for the Torah, since it was weakened on account of the flesh, God has done, sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and as a sin offering, he condemned sin in the flesh, so that the requirement of the Torah might be fulfilled in us, who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Ruach, the Spirit. Amen to that. So here he's referred to as a sin offering, which is another, it's a different category. Turning back in Leviticus, we were left off in chapter 3. Now we're back in chapter 4, which we have, this will be the third week in a row, we're mowing over this lawn in a different direction. Leviticus chapter 4 talks about sacrifices for unintentional sins. And it is interesting, if you listen to the last couple weeks, different ways you can really think about the sin offering. But let's read the first three verses. Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Bnei Yisrael, saying, if anyone sins unintentionally in any of Adonai's mitzvot that they are not to be done, and commits any one of them, or if the anointed Kohen, the priest, sins as to bring guilt on the people, then let him offer for his sin, which he has committed, a young bull without blemish to Adonai for a sin offering." Now the word, you can almost put like little asterisks in your Bible next to these words, sin offering. It's not a great translation. The word is chatat, and it sounds like the word for sin, chatat. So I get where they sound alike. But the word sin offering should be better rendered as cleansing or purification offering, would be much closer to what that the sense of what's going on here. There is a sin, but what needs to happen is cleansing needs to happen. There, the cleansing of the tent of meeting, the cleansing of the altar, you'll see the blood, as you read through that chapter, is placed on a lot of the area of the sanctuary for cleansing purposes. Now, if you're writing your little asterisk and writing cleanse and purify in there, it's nice to have a reference for that. So next to that, write Psalm 51, and then we'll turn to Psalm 51. And we'll get a sense of cleansing and purification, because we're going to look for the word chatat in Psalm 51 and see how it's used there. And then I kind of think you'll see what I'm talking about when we're talking about sin offerings. Psalm 51 is on page 655. So we're going to cross-reference Psalm 51. And we're going to look there for this word for sin offering. Because sin offering, well, the Hebrew word chatat, pops up in Psalm 51. But they don't translate it as sin offering in Psalm 51. And you'll see why. Psalm 51, the heading in the TLV says, "Create in me a clean heart." For the music director, a psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet came to him after he went to Bathsheba. "Be gracious to me, O God, according to your mercy, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are just when you speak and blameless when you judge. Behold, I was born in iniquity and in sin when my mother conceived me. Surely you desire truth in the inner being. Make me know wisdom inwardly." Verse 9 says, "Cleanse me with hyssop and I will be clean." There's that word, chatat. That's the word cleanse. If you have an NASB, it says purify. In the NASB, it says purify me with hyssop and I will be clean. See, that makes sense. Purify, cleansing. It doesn't say, you know, sin sacrifice me with hyssop and I will be clean. That doesn't have good imagery, right? The chatat is about purification. It's about cleansing. And so the sin sacrifices, when you have the English word sin sacrifice, it makes it sound like it's removing sin from you. But really, it's more about cleansing the and purification of the tabernacle. And so the imagery then that the New Testament writers want you to connect is the imagery in Leviticus chapter 4. The blood purifies the Mishkan, the tabernacle, allowing God's presence to dwell in that space. Similarly, The work Yeshua did with his blood, it cleanses us because we're like temples. It allows God to dwell within inside of us because we've been cleansed, allowing the Spirit to transform our being because we have been cleansed and purified by Yeshua. These are the connections that these New Testament writers are trying to get us to connect with, because Leviticus is the first thing traditionally they start teaching their children. And if you are worshiping in the temple continually, like the disciples were, these connections would be much easier to make. And I think they participated in the temple ritual and the offerings with an even deeper sense of purpose after the resurrection. It wasn't just, rote sort of behavior that they were doing. The readers and the hearers of these words in the first century would make these connections because they were familiar with that Torah life, with that temple worship, which is why the study of Torah, especially Leviticus, is very important. We gain deeper understandings and a deeper appreciation for the work of Yeshua, which encourages us, right? It edifies the body, it helps us strengthen just our faith and studying the word, seeking the kingdom, right? This is all for the sake of the kingdom, and that's why the importance of Torah, especially the book Leviticus, will help with all that. I'm going to close. We're going to close with reading the end of Psalm 51. Here David is reaching out to the Lord, of course, because of Bathsheba. He feels very sinful. He feels like he can't come before the Lord because of this great sin he has in his heart. And so he continues in verse 18. He says, this is Psalm 51, 18, "For you would not delight in sacrifice, or I would give it, nor be pleased by burnt offerings." Why? Because he's still struggling with some sin here. "The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." Meaning, we need to have, that's where this all begins. Being contrite, the contrite heart, the broken spirit. If you have that, then that's a great beginning spot. If you don't have that, ritual, offering, sacrifice, none of it means anything without the heart being right. And then, of course, there's a blessing of hope as he closes out this psalm. He says, "In your favor, do good to Zion. Build up the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will delight in righteous sacrifices and whole burnt offerings. Then bulls will be offered on your altar." May that be soon and in our days. Shabbat Shalom.